This is what happened. This is, in a sense, my testament is to the historical facts of how Alpha Mega Labs came to be and what happened to me personally in connection with it. In the year 1989, I was approached by an associate who told me that there was a couple of people who had found a cure for cancer in Texas and were sharing the information with a large number of people and doing videos in connection with their tremendous success. Right away I'm thinking, right. I'm very doubtful, because we have this opinion that the cure for cancer was a very arduous task. I mean, we have a multi-billion dollar cancer research industry, so why would anyone think that finding a cure for cancer is an easy thing, let alone to be found by two country bumpkins who are running around the Texas hillside pushing this stuff, right? Now, at that time, what I was doing for a living is I had founded a company called Lumen Foods. We made vegetarian snack products. That company exists today under another name. I did sell the company in 2007, but I founded it in 86. So I wasn't planning on making this a business in any way. I wanted to investigate further because this friend seemed so adamant about it. So he, in connection with revealing this news to me, he hands me this VHS tape, you know, the big ones. And I put the VHS tape into the rear end. Sure enough, testimony after testimony after testimony, both on the veterinary side and on the human use side. And the video, and you can see this video for yourself, because I've got it at metatopia.org, /video, is I went ahead and had it converted so that although it's really scratchy, I mean, it's not high quality at all, but you can still get the gist of it. And case after case after case of people who were very grateful that their stage 4 cancer, in many cases, they were marked for dead by their doctors or oncologists, and they were cured by this material. So I investigated further, and actually attempted to enter into some kind of co-marketing agreement with the people that were behind this material. I believe it was Texas Medical Incorporated. It was a small company, just basically two guys that had found this, or I thought they'd found it. I'll get to that in a moment. Eventually, I was able to trace this back to the man that was actually had revealed it to him, that had done the research to find out what it was, and his name was Hal Matheny. Hal Matheny was out of Bastrop, Texas. I met with him in person, and I started to do further research. I never was able to come to an agreement with the two gentlemen that were behind Texas Medical. So I continued to research. In the course of my investigations, I was put in touch with a man who had founded not just one, but two pharmaceutical companies. He was a doctor, but not a doctor of a medical doctor. He was, a virologist. He had taught at the medical school at the University of Michigan. But he was really, had his own laboratory and was a very extensive researcher. And not only was he familiar with this material, which I came to learn is called Escharotics, and it has been around for a very, very long time, many centuries, and I'll get to that later. But he had found that although many traditional escharotics, topical compounds that are used to remove cancers, and you can even take them internally to get rid of a cancer internally, used at a halide metal or halide material called zinc chloride, along with one or more herbs that had hydroquinones, and one that was of choice was bloodroot. He said, you don't have to use bloodroot. One that's even more effective is chaparral. Now, all these formulas out there, all these formulas that you see that use is one of their primary herbals, chaparral, the idea from that all these people use came from me, and I, in turn, got it from Dr. Jordan Russell's work. That's the truth of it. That's the true history of it, if you want to know where that comes from. Dr. Russell Jordan did a study in Mexico. Had to cross the border. He didn't feel comfortable doing this study in the United States. Did a study in Mexico with 10,000 different patients. And the photographs were extensive. I should have insisted, I didn't, getting all the photographs that he did. And it was really quite extensive what he did. And out of his work, he actually did start a pharmaceutical company, but not, he said, you're never going to be able to, no matter how much evidence you get. You could cure 10 million people of cancer with this, and I don't care how many billions you put into it, the cancer establishment would never allow you to get this approved. So what he did is he created a company called Block Pharmaceutical, I believe it was out of New Jersey, and he did get approval to sell his drug. It used one of the molecular structures in chaparral that gives it its medicinal effect called NDGA, norodihydroguaiuretic acid. He needed to do that. He did find a workaround. But I got my information from him and I continued to do research. Concurrent with my research, I end up getting charged, criminally charged, with theft of trade secrets. Or as the prosecutor in that case said, it was in the state of Texas, I think in near San Antonio, for curing, for stealing someone's cancer cure. I was actually charged with theft of trade secrets, with stealing someone's cancer cure. I was charged with something that the government says doesn't exist. Think about that for a minute. Really think about that. This is all documented in Metatopia, but I'm giving you, again, I'm giving you the short version. And what I was able to do, me and another co-defendant, what we were able to show is that what they were charging me with doing went back to patents that we'd discovered in the United States Patent Office. Think about this. I'm charged with stealing somebody's cancer cure, the theft of a trade secret of something that's in the United States Patent Office going back to the 1800s. Well, I list all the patents. You can actually click on them. If you go to metatopia.org and you go to chapter one, you can actually click and read the original filed patents for yourself. And they said, these are used to cure, this is gets rid of cancer. These are cancer cures. Daniel's patent was filed in 1866. There was activity before then, after then. A whole slew of U.S. patents that I meticulously list and talk about in Metatopia. Okay, getting back to the narrative. So I'm able to get out of this. The judge can see that this case against me for theft of trade secrets, for stealing somebody's cancer cure, is completely meritless, because I'm working with formulas that are clearly have clearly been in the U.S. Patent Office since the 1800s. After that, I began a series of efforts to commercialize this. I felt there has to be a way to do this in a way that is free of claims, where people can find out on their own what the material does and what it's useful for, etc. I founded a company called Lifeline Sciences. I had some partners that where it just didn't go well. It didn't work out. I was the originator of a product called Herbvale 8 that I did with the late, which a project called Lennox Laboratories I did with the late Richard Ross. And then I decided to go it alone. And sometime around, I believe, 93, we just changed the name to Alpha Mega Labs, and Catherine and I continued on our own until 1995, when it became apparent that the World Wide Web, what we know today as the Internet, was going to be a viable commercial platform for commerce. And our first website was called altcancer.com. Today, altcancer.com and altcancer.net go to the same site. It's mostly used for historic purposes. I largely don't maintain the site. I add a few things here and there to use it for reference purposes. It's huge. There's way over 2,000 pages that I've written on it, and some of those pages are 10 pages long, so it's just huge. If I had to convert it to 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper, I have no many thousands of pages that altcancer.com is, but that's what we launched. And we were the first ones. We were the pioneers. We were the first ones to actually talk about escharotics on the Internet. We were the first ones to actually produce a black salve. And we did it many years before other people got involved. Most of the people that got involved was a direct result of my being imprisoned, which I'll get to in a moment. So anyways, from 1995 until 2003, I sold and marketed not just black salve, but a whole wide variety of natural products that I felt should be seen by the public, should be able to be purchased by the public, that are not common. And I gained a reputation for writing web pages that were detailed with plentiful links so people could research this further on their own. And that business operated successfully until September 17th of 2003. And what happened is that I was arrested. I was charged with selling an unapproved drug. The herbal products that I sold, in particular the black salve, was ruled as an unapproved drug. Never mind that you could never file an NDA, a new drug application with the FDA, and never get that it's approved as a drug. It's herbals. You can't get a approval on this. It's a natural product. There's nothing to patent. There's no claim of a unique molecular entity. It's something that existed for centuries. So I was arrested and put in prison, and I would have to wait until May of 2004 before I was able to go through. I'm arrested in September. I'm having to wait till the following May until I'm able to go before a judge, and they have to actually figure out how they're going to arrest me. Now, I went before the judge in May of 2004, the following May, and they held on to the charge of selling an unapproved drug, defrauding the public. I'm defrauding the public by selling an herbal that's as a drug, which is just obscene. And you get the sense of how obscene it is if you actually read the full work. And again, I contain all the best parts of that in my most current book, The Black Salve. It's in the appendices. Just appendix A, B, and C cover this extensively. So the result of my going for that, they presented me with a huge stack of papers, and they asked me to sign them. This was my plea and everything else, and did not give me the time to read it. And I told the judge that, and he became infuriated. He said, are you entering this for free will? I said, well, I haven't read the documents, but I'll sign them. I wanted to fight it. I told my attorney at the time, his name was Lewis Unglesby, that I wanted to fight it. And they came back and said, well, if he fights it, we'll go after his wife. And then I said, well, what would they charge my wife with? And it came back to me through one of my attorneys in Lake Charles, Louisiana, that the prosecutor in that case said, well, don't you worry, we'll think of something. This is how, when they have an objective, truth has no meaning in a federal court of law. And again, I covered that very extensively online in Chapter 3 of Metatopia, which I'm not putting in print. I don't want it in print. People can read it for free if they want to see all these documents and get the evidence of it. So, you know, they have this saying in federal prison. There's two types of people in federal prison: those who plead, and those who wish they'd pled. And I can tell you it's absolutely true. If you attempt to defend yourself, it's horrific what they do to you. They treat you as an enemy. You're treated as an enemy of the state if you attempt to fight their charges. And to fight their charges, it's not inexpensive. You don't get free, you know, counsel to do this, or at least I didn't. And so I realized that I had to protect my wife, I had to protect my son. I had a couple insiders who told me that, you know, if you fight this, they could even go after your 7-year-old son and put him in foster care and say that you're an unfit father, even though that your wife's out free. They could literally kidnap your son and put him in foster care, and you'll never see your son again. And these are the kind of things that I was confronting at the time. It's just horrific. So anyways, I pled, and then the judge let me out for 3 months on my own. I had to put up my house as some form of, I don't even remember what the name of it is now legally, but it's like collateral security that I wasn't going to escape or, you know, run off to China or Russia or some far off place. So I was imprisoned from September of 2004 until I got out to a halfway house in March of 2006. The previous time I'd done in prison counted toward the sentence. It was a 33-month sentence, and then I was let out, and I was in like this halfway house situation, and I didn't get out of that until I think the following August. I don't even remember the date now, but that lasted through a good part of 2006. I was, however, allowed to leave in August. I got judge's permission. And I admit, you know, I had a little bit of inside help. I had a chemical company, 25,000 square foot building, and extensive natural chemicals, natural chemical company that I created called Preservex. I sold it to a fella who was a 32 degree Mason. And if you don't think these people have connections, trust me, they do. This guy got the judge to let me go to Ecuador, leave the country during this probationary period. Think of that one. This guy himself had been to prison on something and was able to get Ronald Reagan back in the 80s to give him, to completely pardon him. His name was Bob Woodward. And Bob Woodward had, you know, the presidential tie clip and presidential ring and everything else. There's certain things you're allowed to wear if you're actually one of the rare individuals who actually get a presidential pardon. So Ronald Reagan gave a presidential pardon to Bob, and he helped me so that I was able to travel back and forth to Ecuador, because I knew after what had happened to me and how many horrific things had happened to me in court, which again I talk about extensively on at Metatopia chapter 3. Again, I have no intention of putting that in print. Talk about extensively. And I went ahead and started making plans to move to Ecuador, and I would simply go back and forth between Ecuador and the United States. I was still getting consulting fees from Bob and in Lake Charles, and go back and forth. And my wife and I sold our food company on March 15th, 2007. We sold our home. We sold another property that we had. We paid off everybody that we owed money to, which was quite extensive. We used then what was left over, we used to basically move to Ecuador with court permission and come back once a month. When you have this federal probation, you have to report in once a month and fill out a piece of paper saying where you've been, so on and so forth. You know, you have monthly requirements, monthly reporting requirements when you're on U.S. federal probation. So anyways, went back and forth, and then October of 2007, I caught word from an attorney in Opelousas, Louisiana, that in a deposition that involved an insurance accident, something I didn't even know about, I had a former employee who had worked for me, who had been working with federal authorities to try to put me back in prison. She was upset because after I sold the business in March of 07, she was upset by the fact that she didn't get a raise. She didn't feel that she should be treated as she would. She felt that I did her wrong by selling the business, which is just nonsense. When you sell a business, you can't tell a new owner how to run the company. You've sold the business. You're out of it. You may have, like I did, an employment contract where you're continuing to offer your services and act as a consultant. That's frequently done. When you sell a business that has a lot of technical aspects to it, you have to be present in terms of, you have to be available to that new owner so that you're able to give him the information he needs to have a nice, smooth transition. So I did. But she felt that she'd been done wrong, and they said, boy, wait till he comes back. They're going to throw him back in prison. Well, what she was referring to is when you're on probation, if you do anything to violate your probation, they throw you back in prison for the whole thing. And so when I learned that she was doing that, I realized that if I were to stay in Ecuador, at least I'd have a chance of remaining with my wife. But what I knew at that point, after I got that call from that attorney out of Opelousas, Louisiana, I knew that if I returned to the States, I was going to be imprisoned minimum for the rest of the probationary period, and who knows what the judge would tack on to it. So I'm sitting my wife down. I said, we have a very hard decision to make. You understand, if I go back to the States, guaranteed, because of what this woman's doing, and you already saw from the last go around how rigged the game is, I'm absolutely going to be thrown in prison no matter what I present to the contrary. If I stay here in Ecuador, at least I've got a chance of remaining a free man. Okay. So my wife agrees with me. You know, I prefer you stay here. You know, we have a chance of them not doing anything further to you if you stay here. So that's what I did. The late the following year, and while this is going on, my wife and I get a place to stay. We get established. We're at that point, we're living in Guayaquil. Until our life changed on November 19th, 2008. This was months after I received information that is a result of this probation charge. He violated his probation. He said I was making these products I shouldn't be making, which I wasn't. It was a variant, but it wasn't the same thing. And I provided that didn't make any difference. Again, truth has no meaning in a federal court of law, and I talk about that extensively and provide the evidence for that in my work as well. So, they put me on the Interpol red list, and I'm in newspapers all over America with my picture next to Osama bin Laden. This is not a joke. This is real. I have the pictures and so forth on the website. My picture is next to Osama bin Laden. I'm put in a Parade magazine, which goes into the Sunday paper all over America, and the title of the article is, front page of the newspaper is, "Who are the world's most wanted?" Now think about that for a minute. Who are the world's most wanted? And they had 10 different people, and I'm one of them. Listed as one of the world's most wanted criminals for probation violation. That's how crazy this is. So, I don't know what to do. I'm just flabbergasted by the whole thing and really not knowing what to do and really not having the money to, like, well, you know, what am I supposed to do, hide in the Amazon jungle or something? So we try to continue with our lives the best I could, try to get more information about this, and are frequently blocked in trying to get any information about what's behind it. And by the way, if you don't think that they lie their asses off when it comes to this stuff, think again. I mean, on my Interpol red list listing, it said that I was a maker of, the way that it worded it is, it was that I was a maker of narcotics, like I was manufacturing heroin or cocaine, or which is just nonsense. Never in my lifetime have I ever manufactured narcotics, but that's the way it actually reads. It says that I it talks about how dangerous I am. It's like I'm a weapons expert. I mean, it's just out of this world how fake and fabricated is that, you know, that I went to Russia and I speak Russian. I don't speak Russian. Just stuff like that. You just realize that they make up whatever they want to make up. If it sounds good, if it aids their storyline, if it looks good for the news, it's okay. Fake news is the order of the day. That doesn't just happen with Trump. Fake news has been with us forever. So anyways, on November 19th, 2008, they attempt to kidnap me. Instead, they kidnap the wrong person. They kidnap a friend of mine who looks similar to I am, the late Dr. Neville Solomon, and his, at that time, 15-year-old son, Michael, and take him into custody and insist on seeing his phone. Anyways, he's able to actually, I don't know how he's able to do it, but before they get his phone, he's actually to text a friend of mine and tell them, get a hold of Greg, tell him they're really after him, this is Neville, I've been kidnapped, they thought I was you. After several hours of trying to get information out of Neville, and he basically pled, I don't know, to most everything they asked, they finally let him go. It was horrible. I mean, I was going from hiding house to hiding house. It was just horrible, absolutely horrible. It was a nightmare for my wife and I. And during this process, we decide we're going to go ahead and move. We're going to move to Cuenca. We'd already bought property and had been in the process of building a home. And we decided that we're just going to move to Cuenca because there were so many bad memories in connection with that in Guayaquil. And then on December 2nd, 2009, they came in for seconds and they set up a roadblock on a road leading to my house. There's only one, like, significant road that leads to where I live. There are not multiple passes through the mountains. I'm sitting here at 3,000 feet in the Andes Mountains, and like a lot of country homes, there's usually, like, one major road that goes there. They set up a roadblock specifically to do one thing and one thing only: capture me. That was the whole purpose of this operation. With Ecuadorian police were actually working privately for the U.S. government under the table. So I get I'm driving through, driving to my home, and they pull me out of the car, and I get arrested. They send me to Guayaquil, and the first judge in that case said, "Well, you got him low. You let him go. He hasn't done anything wrong. He hasn't violated any. He hasn't violated Ecuadorian law." They didn't like that. The U.S. government didn't like that verdict, so they filed some kind of appeal or whatever. Went to another judge, and that judge delayed it to another judge, and I was supposed to actually go in to for a hearing the following week, but that I wasn't allowed to have my extradition hearing. They kidnapped me before I could actually have my extradition hearing. And in fact, and I talk about this on Metatopia, the judge in my case that was to hear my case heard about what I was doing. One of the police officers felt so bad about what was happening to me. This police officer let me borrow his phone, and I called my wife and my translator at the time, letting them know where I was and what was happening to me, that they were going to put me on a plane and take me back to the United States. I was in the middle of being kidnapped. The judge comes to the airport in Guayaquil, the main international airport in Guayaquil, and tells the American Airlines pilot, "In your plane, you have a Mr. Gregory James Caton. He's there illegally." And the pilot basically says, "I'm on the tarmac, I'm taking off." Basically, on Ecuadorian soil, you have an American Airlines pilot telling an Ecuadorian judge on Ecuadorian soil, basically, "Go screw yourself, I'm in my plane, I'm taking off, goodbye." It was amazing. It was just amazing. I mean, and they're always talking about, the people in charge of things have no respect for the law if it doesn't suit their purposes. The law's a joke. Laws are just to keep little people in their place. The people who really run the show don't follow any laws. They don't have to follow any laws. Look at Hillary Clinton. Okay, so I get taken back to Miami, Florida, and I have to wait to see, you know, there's the long, lengthy, I have to wait to see a judge, and the long and short of it is that I'm further transported to Louisiana to await seeing the judge there, and after several hearings, I'm finally imprisoned for another 22 months, and that's subtracting good times. So I was not able to actually come back to Ecuador until September of 2011, and except for a brief trip I took to Peru in November of 2011, I have not left Ecuador since 2011. Since I came back here in 2011, I haven't left. This is July 2019. I don't have any intention. I don't have a desire really to leave. I did attempt to go to Jeff Berwick's conference along with Ron Paul and a number of other prestigious individuals. I was asked to be a speaker at that conference. I never made it. On February 12th, 2018, February 12, 2018, my wife's 60th birthday, they went ahead and threw me in a detention cell saying that I was a drug dealer. I was a narcotraficante, like someone who would sell, you know, cocaine or heroin by the ton. I was actually treated that way because what had happened was the U.S. government has inserted changes to the Interpol thing, making it look like I still have an active Interpol listing, which is not true at all. This thing has all been adjudicated going back now 7 years, but they refused to remove it. I could hire an attorney and pay him $400 an hour, and he could hit me with a $200,000 bill before it's all said and done, but I can't get that taken off of there. They just want to keep it there, just to, I guess, to screw with me or whatever, but they have the ability to do that. Again, these things wouldn't happen if truth actually mattered. Truth doesn't matter in the federal system or in the federal court system. It just doesn't. Truth has no bearing. It's whatever they want to say or do. So, since that time, my wife and acted have done work as consultants. We still have our herbal business, Alpha Mega Labs, which is really a shadow of what it used to be. Before I wished in 2003, we were actually quite large. We were much bigger actually than we are today because we're the only ones on the internet who are actually dealing and selling escharotics. After I went to prison, people who were new in it jumped out of the woodwork. The last 3 years, I've also authored 3 books. All of this can be seen at gregcaton.com, G-R-E-G-C-A-T-O-N, my name, gregcaton.com, the books that I've written, where I try to take what I've learned from this and expand it into larger issues of what's going on in the world, because the world is just, gone to hell in a handbasket with a speed I couldn't have possibly have predicted, and I want to be able to put it in a framework in light of the things that I learned as a result of what happened to me. So that is a brief, a lot of facts that I could have inserted that I won't because I'm trying to make it brief, but that's a brief history of Alpha Mega Labs. We still operate today. It's like I say, it's a slimmed down version of what we used to be, but we still operate. We ship from the United States, Peru, the United States, Slovenia. We ship from different places, but it's still smaller than we used to be, and we're proud to provide this service to the general public in the sale of natural products.